Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
We need a public option in retirement.
We continue our conversation with Connecticut scholar James W. Russell of Eastern Connecticut State University. A well-known author, Russell has been much in demand as a speaker on the state and national retirement fund crisis. It's like a perfect storm. With rising costs of living, slow wages, a down market, ever higher health care costs, America's teachers and other state employees have lost as much as 40% of their life savings just ahead of their retirement years. They bought into an alternate retirement program run by ING International and had high hopes of earning far more. But at this point, even if they were to contribute twice as much to their funds as those who stayed in the conventional retirement system, they would still receive less than half as much in benefits. In his recent book, Double Standard, Social Policy in Europe and the United States, James W. Russell looked at how changes to government policies could correct major social problems. Here we talk about the retirement fund crisis in context with a failing health care reform effort in Washington. Wall Street is also doing better, but we asked James Russell if that means the crisis is resolving for average Americans.
It's certainly true that the stock market has recovered a little bit. It certainly hasn't gone back to where it was before. So for a certain group of people, the crisis is attenuating. But then again, we're also seeing that the unemployment rate is climbing. And so on, you know, different ends of the spectrum, it's either getting worse or it's getting better. I think that's true in all of these kinds of crises, and certainly even in normal times, because the economy is so complicated that depending upon where you are within it, you can be doing better when other people are doing worse and vice versa, which is not to say that I think it all evens out. It's to say that it's a very variegated picture of what's happening. And if we're in a recovery, you know, whether it's a long-term one or just a temporary one, there are certainly people who are not a part of that recovery, or at least not yet a part of that recovery.
Well, retirement funds have to be created under a kind of social contract. It's just that it's a one-way street here. I mean, if people can't get out of this fund, even when it tanks, you know, loses 40%, then they have basically zero protection for the money they need to pay health care bills and other costs of retirement. You know, society's at risk because then, you know, the government may have to step in and take care of people. Now, of course, as costs continue to rise, there are questions of just what people are supposed to do in order to obtain enough capital to retire on. Here they seem to be giving profits to managers. How, by the way, do these managers justify this huge income off of people who are trying to save to retire?
I'm not so sure that they're greatly worried about justifying it to themselves. They're setting up a business, and they're going to set up the business like anything else in an unregulated climate where nobody is really looking out for the people who might be victims of this. And also, I think what adds to this, because finance is so complicated, as we've certainly learned in this crisis, I mean, that you can set up all kinds of exotic products that the people who are supposed to be regulating them, if they're even allowed to regulate them, don't even understand what they are. I would argue in Connecticut, it may be an exaggeration, that there's probably not 20 people who really understand how the state pension fund operates. But many more people make decisions about it, you know, whether they're in legislatures or whether they're in advocacy groups, you know, whether they're unions charged with protecting the interests of their members. Okay, but if you set these things up in such a way that they're incredibly complicated, that then becomes a way of shielding them, really, from any deep public scrutiny. You know, we're just dealing with a slice of what is a much bigger problem. I don't want to indicate that we're sort of unusual victims. Lots of people are facing this issue in all different manifestations of it. What, you know, if they have 401ks, if they no longer have traditional pension funds, if they have nothing, all of that. I mean, the general issue is if people work, you know, 30, 40 years of their life, they really deserve to have support in retirement. And it's tremendously uneven, you know, all over the United States, In our case, we're talking about one company, ING, which is a Dutch financial services company that was given the business in Connecticut to manage the alternate retirement program for state employees. They collect their management fees and I presume commissions also on whatever they sell within it. And whether they're better or they're worse than other ones that do that, I don't know. I mean, I'm not so much interested in them being a particularly bad one as in this whole approach is a particularly bad approach to ensuring retirement security.
You say there's a simple, direct solution here, and that is to allow people in this alternative retirement plan to roll over what they've accumulated and purchase service credits in the state's retirement service.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how that would work.
It's allowed in a number of states that if you're in one retirement system, you can move into another one. And that's what we're advocating in Connecticut because we're in what we call a failed retirement system. And so we're trying to win in the state legislature, perhaps directly from our employers, a change so that we would be able to take what we have built up in this privatized system and roll it over into the public pension, which is a much more sound basis for financing retirement. It works in other states, you know, so it's not a question of whether it can work or not work. It can clearly work. It's a political question, you know, whether people who have the power to do this are willing to allow this to occur. That's the solution to our problem. For a lot of people, they don't have that solution. Like they're in a 401k, so there's no obvious public pension plan that they could roll over into. But I think that there are creative solutions for them, too. And this is one that nobody is talking about on a national level, but I think it would work. There's something called a nonprofit annuity. Right now, if you're in a 401k, what you're supposed to do when you retire is you either take your money in a lump sum, which is not a very smart thing to do because then you have to pay a lot of taxes on a windfall, or you annuitize it, which means you give the money to an insurance company, which then guarantees to pay you a percentage of that money for the rest of your life. The insurance companies sell a for-profit.
To start, the Egyptian government abruptly canceled their travel plans into Gaza. As Joanna Rivera and Christopher Hutchinson explain, there were protests outside the U.S. Embassy in Cairo and at an organization for journalists. Joanna L. Rivera is a chemical engineer and pharmacy graduate student at UConn, the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. Joanna, welcome once again to Talk Nation Radio.
How are you?
What's it been like in the streets of Cairo? I understand you've been going to protests there.
Well, we just came from a demonstration at the Journalist Syndicate here in Cairo. We were here with some Egyptian young people, families, but it was really powerful to be chanting with the Egyptian people. They were defying their government, and they were chanting, "We will go to Gaza. They want to join us." We approached some of the students there, and they said that they want to march with us to go to Gaza.
Joanna, where has all of this been unfolding in Cairo? Explain where these events have been going on.
This is in downtown, close to Tahrir Square. So there were hundreds of people there. Also, there is a French delegation stationed at the in front of the French embassy. They've been camping there for 3 days, demanding their government, the French government, to allow them to go to Gaza too. So there have been different manifestations all over Cairo. There was an American activist that hung a Palestinian flag over the Cairo Tower, which is one of the tallest buildings here in Cairo. So we've been doing a lot of things. We've been surrounded by police in these different demonstrations. So they're having an eye on us.
Now, from the pictures, the police presence looks pretty substantial there in Cairo.
Well, in terms of the numbers, yes, they've been like lines of three rows of policemen trying to barricade the French embassy. We were there yesterday and today. And it's just so tiring. I wouldn't say there has not been any violent incidents, but it's just physically and psychologically tiring. It's really hot here, and people is in camping, you know, sleeping on sleeping bags, very crowded. There's only one toilet for 250 people in the embassy, so they have to wait hours to use the toilet. And at some point, they have not let the woman out of the barricades to use the toilet. So it's really psychological and physical challenging.
Joanna, we were able to reach a student in Gaza on December 28th. You might say your counterpart. And I'd like you to listen. This is young Dima Mishal. She was on her way to a demonstration where all of the delegates were supposed to have joined together. But Dima was still hopeful that you and the others would be joining her.
Well, we are still waiting for that. We hope that they can make it. You know, we are trying to go the same, the very same schedule. And we're trying to make the demonstration go on, you know. But we really hope they can make it. You know, everyone here is waiting for the delegates.
Dima Mishal, as you know, the delegation has hit a snag. What is your message to people waiting in Cairo, hoping that they can join you?
I hope that everyone can make it here. Gaza, I need you to come, and we are waiting here for you, people. I hope that they can make it. We can feel them here. Their voices is reaching us, but we really hope if they can come to Gaza so we can demonstrate all of us together and raise the peace, you know.
Now, we actually lost that call, unfortunately. Joanna, what would your message be in return?
What would I say to my counterparts in Gaza?
Yes.
We're doing what we humanly can to get the attention of the press, the government. Now we have the support of the Egyptian people who is uniting with us in the call to the government. So we're doing all that we can, but the Egyptian government has been really, really strong in their position that they're not letting us in. And there's also part of the delegation, I think 38 people in El Arish, which is a town nearby the border, and they have been banned to go out of the
And we lost our call to Joanna L. Rivera in Cairo, and then were able to get her back. Joanna, just continue. You were talking about the circumstances of this delegation. It's difficult for people to be able to move about along the border area.
What I was saying is that we feel the support of the people here in Cairo, the Egyptian people. They're supporting us 100%. But that's not enough, because if the government does not let us in, then, you know, we made a lot of effort to be here. There's people from South Africa, there's people from the U.S., from France, Italy, Britain. There's people from 43 countries, and we are demanding that all of us get in. We want all to get in, because we all work for it, and we work hard. We want to show solidarity with the people in Gaza. I just wanted to add also that this delegation has provided a safe space for Egyptians to come out of the street and protest, and also that there has been awareness about the building of the wall in Rafah within the Egyptian border with Gaza, and that also workers there have refused to continue their construction work in solidarity with the Gaza people.
And this wall construction, as I understand it from your letters now, going on with the assistance or even direction of American engineers.
It was confirmed by the U.S. Embassy that the construction of the wall was designed with American help by American engineers.
And you said you were able to meet Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein, the 85-year-old, who, as we understand it now, is on a hunger strike. How many people in all are on a hunger strike there?
Yes, I met yesterday Hedy Epstein and another Franciscan priest called Luis, among others, that they are on a hunger strike. I think we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep demonstrating. We're going to keep defying the Egyptian government until we get our needs met. And if there is indeed a delegation going to Gaza of 100 people, we will not live here. We will continue to protest because 100 people is not enough. We came 1,300 people. That's what we decide as a group. We want to go all together. If there is 100 people only that are going, it's just to keep us quiet, but we're going to continue. The people that are here are willing to continue to demonstrate and not accept the decision of the Egyptian government. And there were talks also about walking, and we will see how that goes. We'll meet tomorrow.
And how many of them are doing the hunger strike? Do you know?
I think at least 10 people, if not more. I saw the list when they were collecting the names, and at least there were people from 85, 70 years, 59 years, 40 years old. So there were at least 10 people, if not more.
Joanna, in many of the countries that we've been talking about, we're seeing a lot of interest on the part of students. Is that something that you're seeing in Cairo?
Yeah, we were in the protest. There was a Canadian Palestinian student, and he stood there and he said, "I just used all my savings and I wanted to go to Gaza, and I will not accept that we are denied by the Egyptian government." So I think we are students from all over the world. There's students from France, there's students from Canada, there's students in the U.S. We're going to fight together, and at least what I see as a positive thing is that people is starting to know here in Egypt. Maybe people were aware and were not willing to take the risk to go to the streets, but now they know and they feel safe that we're here, and they're taking advantage of that opportunity. And we see young Egyptian people, women, children on their father's shoulders in Free Palestine. We want to go to Gaza. So I think this is a wonderful opportunity for them to speak out and to really feel safe about it. We're going to escort them. We're going to stay with them. We're going to do whatever it takes. But it feels so wonderful to know that they can go out and they can speak. And one of the chances to say, we are Arabs and Palestine is an Arab country. So they feel the suffering of the people in Gaza and Palestine. And for us being here is an opportunity for them, as I said before, to go out. And I think it will change even if after we go, people will have the spirit and will have the steadfastness to keep protesting. So we saw people shouting slogans to Netanyahu and Mubarak in front of the police, and they were not afraid. So I think that's going to make a difference. Yeah, I mean, you see children chanting and women chanting, and there were some amazing women that we met, originally Palestinians, and they were there with us, and they said, "We are tired. We're tired of not doing anything." But we spoke with them for several hours, and they were so knowledgeable. They were mothers, Egyptian mothers, Jordanian mothers, that were so knowledgeable of what's going on in our own country, in their country, and they said, "We're just tired, and now is the time to go out and speak, and we're not afraid anymore."
Joanna L. Rivera is a graduate student at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. Joanna, it's come to my attention that you have managed to learn to speak Arabic. Can you say goodbye to us for this New Year's special in Arabic?
Nahnu urid as-salam wa al-hurriya fi Filistin. Thank you, Dori.
We're speaking with U.S. peace activists in Cairo. They're still hoping to cross into Gaza as part of the Gaza Freedom March. March organizers say they were dragged, pulled, and manhandled on the pavement by Egyptian police. They were trying to enter the U.S. Embassy in Cairo for a scheduled meeting. According to the Christian Science Monitor, Medea Benjamin of the peace group Code Pink said she and 50 other U.S. nationals were beaten up by Egyptian police as they carried with them a letter of support from U.S. Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts. Officially, the U.S. Embassy maintains a policy enacted under the Bush administration as a strong recommendation against travel into Gaza. Still, the policy is that any U.S. citizen who wishes to may speak with an embassy official. Media activist Sam Husseini got one Egyptian security official on tape in the streets of Cairo explaining that the decision about whether or not the group might cross into Gaza as planned was actually up to U.S. officials, not Egyptians.
We just want to go to the embassy. You're preventing us.
If it's a permission to go.
We are wanting to go. You're preventing us from going.
Not me. They told us.
They told you. The U.S. Embassy told you. What's your name? Yes.
U.S. officials have maintained that Egypt has full control over the Gaza border. Christopher Hutchinson, we're going to be speaking with March spokesperson Zedad Lunat. But what have you been hearing about any events that may be planned for the next few days as you're stuck in Cairo?
The students are planning on organizing a march with Egyptians somewhere in the city. Nothing has been determined yet. There's going to be an organizational meeting, and it's going to be a very great event because the international presence here has allowed for Egyptians to come out and voice their opinions and dislike of what Mubarak has been doing.
What was the reaction, you know, amongst the larger group of some 1,400 people to the offer, won through negotiations, to allow just 100 people across the border?
The sentiment at the journalist syndicate protest was that all of us would go or none of us would go. And I think that the sentiment is strong amongst the delegation, and that the attempt to only let 100 people through is really an attempt to undermine this whole trip. And it's a really dirty trick that the U.S. Embassy and the Egyptian government are playing on 1,300 internationals who came to show support to the Gazan people. And I have to say that the people in Egypt here are overwhelmingly supportive of what we're doing. Everywhere we go, we're asked, are you American? Are you French? Are you supporting Gaza? And you go and you start talking to people and they say, you know, we cannot do much. All we can do is pray that the Gazans are free, but you being here actually helps give us a voice. So I think letting just 100 people through to Gaza seriously undermines all the efforts that we've put into this event.
This idea of Palestinians engaging in peaceful protest, it isn't new, even though to some newly involved in this issue, it may seem that it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This peaceful demonstrations are not new to the Palestinian movement. The first Intifada, or uprising as they call it, had many examples of peaceful demonstrations. And in fact, you know, weapons were often only used as a means of self-defense in the end. There's a whole history of whether they're taking tactics from Martin Luther King Jr. or from Gandhi or any of these other nonviolent movements. The first inclination is always absolutely to demand by peaceful means their basic human rights. And, you know, to say that it's new is completely missing the whole history of the Palestinian movement.
Well, finally, news reports tend to always center on Israeli security, the, quote, Palestinian problem. But there's very little attention paid to the whole history of land in this region. Can you just end by commenting on that, Christopher Hutchinson?
Yeah, you know, Dory, I mean, this is all about a land grab for Israel. If you look at a lot of the founding documents, you know, going back to the 1800s, the talk was of from the river to the sea, that was going to be Israel. And they've slowly made that. You can see, if you look at the map of Palestine before the colonization of Eastern and Western European Jews coming into the area, the Zionist movement, the areas that were controlled by Palestinians where they lived and worked and farmed has significantly diminished throughout the last 50, 60 years. And they have every right to demand a return to their homes. And I think the end result, my personal opinion, is that it needs to be one secular Palestine, Israel, whatever you want to call it, but it needs to include all members of society, because as it stands right now, only a portion of that society has full rights, and it is a complete disregard for human rights across the world to deny Palestinians the right to education, health care, a decent standard of living, housing.
Christopher Hutchinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Great, Joy. Thank you so much.
We turn finally to Zedad Lunat in Cairo, where he's a spokesperson for the Gaza Freedom March. Zedad Lunat, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, where do things stand with this decision on whether or not marchers will accept the offer to send just 100 people across Egypt's border into Gaza?
What happened is we are about 1,400 people here in Cairo from 43 different countries. We came here with the objective of entering Gaza with the hope that we will march side by side with Palestinians from Gaza to break the illegal and immoral Israeli siege. We arrived here, the Egyptian government gave the answer for our request, and they said that we couldn't enter. We then decided to bring the struggle here in Egypt to pressure the Egyptian government to allow us into Gaza. We had several initiatives. Different national contingents went to their own embassies, including the U.S. embassy. Many were detained outside the U.S. embassy with the permission of the embassy. They were American citizens. And we had an initiative by the women's group that approached Suzanne Mubarak, the wife of the president, to allow us all in. She gave us an answer later in the day in which she said that only 100 persons can enter Gaza, but with the banner of the Gaza Freedom March removed. We came here as Gaza Freedom March. We want to do the march. We did not accept the conditions they have because we come here with overtly political intentions to open the borders of Gaza, to give the basic human rights to the Palestinians in Gaza and respect international law. So we rejected that proposal. Initially, the Egyptian government has said that the reason that we could not enter Gaza was that it was not secure. So if it is secure for 100 people, why wouldn't it be secure for 1,400? Therefore, we exposed the hypocrisy of the Egyptian government. They were willing to allow people in. It's just that they don't want the march to happen. And we know as evidence that Egypt has pressure from other countries. Egypt is not acting alone. Israel, according to the agreements Egypt has with Israel, has a say to whom enters in Gaza, and obviously our march was undesirable for Israel because they want to continue enforcing the illegal and the immoral siege, but also the United States, because the United States gives $2 billion a year to Egypt to sustain this authoritarian regime. Barack Obama was in Egypt earlier this year to make his speech calling for human rights, respect to international law and equality. It was a hypocritical speech because the Egyptian government is repressive. They are repressing not only their own populations. They removed our permits for us to move into Gaza. They do not allow us to express freely in the streets of Cairo. And they are collaborating with the biggest criminal, which is the State of Israel, which is violating not only international law, but all standards of dignity and humanity.
What do you make of the timing of Israel's stepped-up program of arresting Palestinian activists like Abdallah Abu Rama? He has support from South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu and many others. Is there something to be said about the timing here of, you know, Israel's crackdown, now events in Cairo, they're blocking you from getting into Gaza? What's the message they're trying to send? I mean, do you sense that these governments are a little bit worried about this new effort by peace activists?
The security forces come and surround us in the hundreds in order to isolate us and to break us apart. They were arrested. All of us are nonviolent activists. We do not condone violence in any way. And the Egyptian authorities have been arresting people pretty much arbitrary. It's a sort of given an example for us to dissuade us from protesting, but obviously this will not stop us continuing to condemning the siege of Gaza and bringing the struggle here into Egypt.
Zidad Luna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me in your program.
To learn more about Gaza Freedom Marches in Gaza, Cairo, the U.S., Canada, and other countries, go to GazaFreedomMarch.org, or you can try GeneralStrikeComics.com/Gaza-Freedom-blog. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated nationally through Pacifica Network. Thanks to all of the stations that air our program, and Happy New Year. Our music by Fritz Heed. And we heard a few bars of Roger Waters' Hello, I Love You. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions.